Have you ever wondered where the concept of ghosts, aliens, or the Loch Ness Monster began? Who was the first female serial killer? And what exactly defines what a wives' tale is? If you would like to delve into the dark side of history, join me, Paige Wollstonehume, in my quest to uncover the sometimes unbelievable origins of all things strange or spooky. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Strange Origins. With this third episode, I wanted to research the history of a group of people that I've always been very wary of growing up. Clowns. Clowns are not everyone's favorite topic, and I don't blame them. Maybe it's the fact that one of Stephen King's most famous antagonists is a clown that lures children to the sewers. One of the first horror films to scare me to death as a kid was the 1990 made-for-TV film It, starring Tim Curry. I can still remember hiding behind a couch crying. Or maybe you have memories of the 2016 clown sightings, when strangers would dress up and attempt to scare the public. What not many people know is that these mass sightings of clowns began as a stunt to move traffic to a Facebook page advertising a horror film in England. Somehow, through the public's twisted sense of humor, it evolved into something much bigger. Random clowns began making appearances in every U.S. state, 9 territories in Canada, and altogether 18 separate countries, which is a lot of clowns. I know that I personally have never been a fan of McDonald's spokesperson, Ronald McDonald. Even though he does a lot to raise money for charity, for some reason he's never been my favorite fast food mascot. I think it has something to do with his height and that smile on his face. I'm not sure. Maybe you are afraid of clowns because you had the misfortune of seeing the classic 1980s horror film Killer Clowns from Outer Space or Twisty from American Horror Story. I think it's safe to say that there's a lot about clowns in today's world that leaves a bad taste in the mouth. So it's not surprising that coulrophobia, the fear of clowns, is a pretty common fear. As history will often show me, this wasn't always the case. Clowns were, at one point in time at least, beloved by all. In ancient Rome, there were several different types of performers that are considered to be the grandfather of clowns. They were usually just opening acts for more serious performances, or simple characters that pushed the plot along. Sometimes even performances were required off the stage. One notable type of jester that was hired was the Roman archimime. These people were paid to attend a funeral where they had to imitate the deceased in their voice and mannerisms. Essentially, they were hired to make fun of what was going on. A lot of the time, they would mock how expensive the funeral was, or just generally rude things about the event, in order to lighten the mood. Over time, especially through the Middle Ages, clowns became more of an entertainment fixture, entertaining nobility at large parties under the name of jesters. Later on, they would become famous for performing as humorous servants in Italian operas. Generally, they were around to keep spirits high and people laughing. So I guess that begs the question, where did it all go wrong? Stick with me after this short break to find out more about the history Edgar Allan Poe has with clowns, and why the clown portraits of a serial killer are worth so much today. Welcome back. Now, I think that to preface how the modern image of the clown was built, I need to introduce you to the basic idea of what I believe to be the archetype of a clown. That is, the archetype of a trickster. A trickster is a Jungian archetype that can be found as far back as the Bible. The devil was an original trickster, as far as I can tell, but there are Greek and Roman versions that are prevalent, such as Prometheus. If you don't remember who Prometheus is from your Greek studies in college, he is the guy that stole fire from the gods and gave it to the mortals, only to be punished by being chained to a rock by Zeus. If that wasn't bad enough already, Zeus also had a crow eat Prometheus's liver every day, only to have it grow every night, continuing the torture for eternity. What I'm getting at, though, is that Prometheus used his wiles for survival. I'm not sure if he meant to give fire to the world as much as he meant for it to help just him. Other examples of tricksters include Bugs Bunny and a fan favorite Loki from Norse mythology. These characters all share the traits of being mischievous and clever, and of using all their wiles in order to survive. If you think about it, this is, in essence, what a clown does. They deceive people with their looks and their mannerisms in order to survive. Born of the medieval court jester, Joseph Grimaldi is an excellent example of this archetype. Born in London during the Regency era, Joseph created the image of what we today see as a clown, or rather, he created the first white-faced clown. He was a storyteller and actor, and with the creation of a character referred to as Joey, he commanded large audiences and their pockets. His life didn't start out this way, though. He grew up poor, which is ironic as the origin of the word clown comes from 1500s England, meaning someone who was poor, rustic, or a rude peasant. Joseph was mostly raised by his mother during his first few years, but when he was able to walk and talk, he was given jobs by his father, who was an actor. A serial philanderer who was said to have had at least 10 children with 3 different women, Joseph's father was known for taking dangerous parts in performances. On one occasion, Joseph was even thrown by his father into the orchestra pit by a chain. Joseph was playing a monkey who was swung around by its owner. Somehow, whether by a fascination with these stunts or desperation, Joseph stayed on with his father, earning a living at whatever job he could get in the entertainment industry. Later in his father's life, he became abnormally fascinated with the idea of death. He would use his acting skills and fake his own death in front of his children in order to gauge their reactions. He even went so far as to have his eldest daughter decapitate him post-mortem to ensure that he wasn't buried alive. This earned her an extra 5 pounds in his will, which, in my opinion, was not enough. After his father's death, Joseph was left as the primary male breadwinner. Years later, he would finally find lasting success with his character of Joey. With a painted white face, red triangles on his cheeks, and large red lips, he was praised for his trickster-like ability to entertain with the greatest of flourishes. Today, Grimaldi is remembered for his contribution on the first Sunday of February at the Holy Trinity Church in Hackney. Hundreds of clown performers attend a service in full costume every year. Even Charles Dickens, who as a child saw Joey perform in 1820, was surprised at how well a biography of him, which he helped to edit, had sold. This may have even played a part in his literary creation of the alcoholic clown character in his 1836 novel Pickwick Papers. While Grimaldi thrust the modern age of the clown into society, he wasn't the one that attached fear to the character. When clowning became comic relief in circuses, Edmond de Congour, a French literary critic in 1876, succinctly said about the act that "the clown's art is now rather terrifying and full of anxiety and apprehension. Their suicidal feats, their monstrous gesticulations, and frenzied mimicry, reminding one of the courtyard of a lunatic asylum." About 25 years before that, though, Edgar Allan Poe contributed to the idea of a less-than-nice clown. The short story Hop Frog, or Eight Chained Orangutans, was published in 1849. The story follows a person with dwarfism who is taken from their homeland to become a jester for a king fond of mean practical jokes. After a few incidences where he witnesses the king abusing his friend and fellow dwarf, he dresses his king in the court for a masquerade. Little did they know, though, that their costumes were made of a highly flammable material, and that Hop Frog would later set them all on fire that night and lock the doors. It's interesting that, while entertaining for enjoyment and happiness, jesters and clowns always seem to have an undercurrent of darkness about them. In turn, and most likely inspired by the aforementioned stories, one of the more famous plays involving a clown, titled Pagliacci, premiered in London in 1892. A tragedy, the story centers on an actor who plays a clown named Pagliacci. After a few events, he finds out that his wife is cheating on him. Though a lot of Italian operas focus on marital discourse, this one was a bit more dramatic. While in the middle of a performance, he begs his wife to give him the name of his lover. When he is overcome by anger, he stabs his wife and her lover, who comes to her aid. With the audience assuming it's all just part of the play, they applaud the act, and the main character replies with the words, "The comedy is finished." Less than a century later, in the 1960s, John Wayne Gacy would forever create a link between clownery and horror in the minds of the public. After a childhood of being both physically and verbally abused by his father, Gacy slowly began to get away with, in turn, abusing young boys in his hometown. A very good liar, Gacy knew how to twist a story to his benefit. Later on, he would develop an interest in becoming a clown for fundraisers, parades, and even children's birthday parties, where he would perform as Pogo the Clown. A side note that I think is ironic is that it was noted by a few more professional clowns at the time that Gacy used sharp corners at the edges of his red lipstick. This was in contrast to the more traditional round corners, which were used by the majority of clowns so as to purposefully not scare children. If you're interested in serial killers, I would suggest listening to a full podcast of Gacy, as he was an interesting person to research from a psychological point of view. After he was convicted for 33 murders in 1980, all of them male, with 26 of those found in a crawl space under his home, he was sentenced to death row. It's important to note that Gacy never used his clown outfit to lure children to him, but rather just enjoyed performing at carnivals and children's parties. But the fact that he painted self-portraits of himself as a clown while on death row interlinked the two ideas permanently in the public's mind. Today, his paintings have fetched up to $175,000 for a single piece. From Joey to Ronald, where did it all go wrong? I do know that a majority of today's professional clowns truly only wish to see people smile. But historically speaking, I don't think that clowns were ever really that good to begin with. Tricksters have often used their wiles for good, but they aren't all giving or moral creatures. Simply put, they have a will to survive, and that seems to be the only thing they care about. I enjoy the fact that Stephen King wrote Pennywise as a clown for this reason. It sometimes surprises people to find out that Pennywise wasn't actually a clown, but rather a shapeshifter. He's the ultimate trickster who turns into whatever is necessary to scare and eat children in King's fictional town of Derry, Maine. Somewhere down the line, though, this creature saw that clowns were tricksters too. They gained your trust, entertained you, and then took what they wanted. In my opinion, clowns are a basic part of pop culture at this point, and we won't stop seeing them around at Halloween anytime soon. With popular characters such as DC's The Joker, Pennywise the Dancing Clown, and American Horror Story's Twisty, clowns are just now a part of the public state of mind. But what started out as a way to entertain the masses has morphed into something dark, a warning of some sort. Clowns, to me, are a reminder to stay out of the woods at night, stay away from storm drains, and stay away from strange men offering you a ride somewhere. Now, as I come to the end of this episode, I want to thank anyone that took the time to listen, and also to thank my sponsor, Anchor.fm, for allowing me to get this podcast out for you all to hear. For anyone that has a story they would like to share, I would absolutely love to be able to hear from you, wherever you are and whoever you are. It would be great to know what about this week's topic interested you, if you have your own experiences with it, or if you have suggestions as to what would make this podcast better. I would also love to be able to read your stories aloud on the podcast so that listeners know that they aren't alone in their experiences. I'm working on building an Instagram page for Strange Origins, so if you like what you hear or you like spooky memes, go give me a follow. Also, if you would like to support this podcast and to help it grow into something bigger, please visit my Patreon page, which is listed in the description of this episode, and where I offer great gifts to those supporting my dream job. And as always, guys, remember to keep it strange.